Chapter 8. I'm dreaming,
Duncan Quagmire said. His voice was a hoarse whisper of utter shock.
I must be dreaming. But how can you be dreaming?
Isadora asked him.
If I'm having the same dream. I once read about a journalist,
Duncan whispered,
who was reporting on a war and was imprisoned by the enemy for 3 years. Each morning, she looked out her cell window and thought she saw her grandparents coming to rescue her, but they weren't really there. It was a hallucination. I remember reading about a poet,
Isadora said,
who would see 6 lovely maidens in his kitchen on Tuesday nights, but his kitchen was really empty. It was a phantasm.
No,
Violet said, and reached her hand between the bars of the cage. The Quagmire triplets shrank back into the cage's far corner, as if Violet were a poisonous spider instead of a long-lost friend.
It's not a hallucination. It's me, Violet Baudelaire. And it's really Klaus,
Klaus said.
I'm not a phantasm.
Sunny,
said Sunny. The Baudelaire orphans blinked in the darkness, straining their eyes to see as much as possible. Now that they were no longer dangling from the end of a rope, they were able to get a good look at their gloomy surroundings. Their long climb ended in a tiny, filthy room with nothing in it but the rusty cage that the extension cord had clinked against. But the Baudelaire saw that the passageway continued with a long hallway just as shadowy as the elevator shaft that twisted and turned away into the dark. The children also got a good look at the Quagmires, and that view was no less gloomy. They were dressed in tattered rags, and their faces were so smeared with dirt that the Baudelaires might not have recognized them if the 2 triplets had not been holding the notebooks they took with them wherever they went. But it was not just the dirt on their faces, or the clothes on their bodies, that made the Quagmires look so different. It was the look in their eyes. The Quagmire triplets looked exhausted, and they looked hungry, and they looked very, very frightened. But most of all, Isadora and Duncan looked haunted. The word haunted, I'm sure you know, usually applies to a house, graveyard, or supermarket that has ghosts living in it. But the word can also be used to describe people who have seen and heard such horrible things that they feel as if ghosts are living inside them, haunting their brains and hearts with misery and despair. The Quagmires looked this way, and it broke the Baudelaires' hearts to see their friends look so desperately sad.
"Is it really you?"
Duncan said, squinting at the Baudelaires from the far end of the cage.
"Can it really, really be you?"
"Oh, yes,"
Violet said, and found that her eyes were filling with tears.
"It's really the Baudelaires,"
Isadora said, stretching her hand out to meet Violet's.
"We're not dreaming, Duncan. They're really here."
Klaus and Sunny reached into the cage as well, and Duncan left his corner to reach the Baudelaires as best he could from behind bars. The 5 children embraced as much as they could, half laughing and half crying, because they were all together once more.
"How in the world did you know where we are?"
Isadora said.
"We don't even know where we are."
"You're in a secret passageway inside 667 Dark Avenue," Klaus said. "But we didn't know you'd be here. We were just trying to find out what Gunther, that's what Olaf is calling himself now, was up to, and our search led us all the way down here."
"I know what he's calling himself," Duncan said, "and I know what he's up to."
He shuddered and opened his notebook, which the Baudelaires remembered was dark green, but looked black in the gloom.
"Every second we spend with him, all he does is brag about his horrible plans. And when he's not looking, I write down everything he tells us so I don't forget it. even though I'm a kidnap victim, I'm still a journalist.
And I'm still a poet,
Isadora said, and opened her notebook, which the Baudelaires remembered was black, but now looked even blacker.
Listen to this. On auction day, when the sun goes down, Gunther will sneak us out of town.
How will he do that?
Violet asked.
The police have been informed of your kidnapping and are on the lookout.
I know,
Duncan said.
Gunther wants to smuggle us out of the city and hide us away on some island where the police won't find us. He'll keep us on the island until we come of age, and he can steal the Quagmire sapphires. Once he has our fortune, he says he'll take us and...
Don't say it!
Isadora cried, covering her ears.
He's told us so many horrible things. I can't stand to hear them again.
Don't worry, Isadora, Klaus said. We'll alert the authorities, and they'll arrest him before he can do anything.
But it's almost too late,
Duncan said.
The inn auction is tomorrow morning. He's going to hide us inside one of the items and have one of his associates place the highest bid.
Which item?
Violet asked. Duncan flipped the pages of his notebook, and his eyes widened as he reread some of the wretched things Gunther had said.
I don't know, he said. He's told us so many haunting secrets, Violet. So many awful schemes. All the treachery he has done in the past, and all he's planning to do in the future. It's all here in this notebook, from VFD all the way to this terrible auction plan.
We'll have plenty of time to discuss everything, Klaus said. But in the meantime, let's get you out of this cage before Gunther comes back. Violet, do you think you can pick this lock?
Violet took the lock in her hands and squinted at it in the gloom. It's pretty complicated, she said. He must have bought himself some extra difficult locks after I broke into that suitcase of his when we were living with Uncle Monty. If I had some tools, maybe I could invent something, but there's absolutely nothing down here.
Agwen?
Sunny asked, which meant something like, could you saw through the bars of the cage? Not saw, Violet said, so quietly that it was as if she was talking to herself. I don't have the time to manufacture a saw, but maybe... Her voice trailed off, but the other children could see in the gloom that she was tying her hair up in a ribbon to keep it out of her eyes.
Look, Duncan, Isadora said. She's thinking up an invention. We'll be out of here in no time.
Every night since we've been kidnapped, Duncan said, we've been dreaming of the day when we would see Violet Baudelaire inventing something that could rescue us.
If we're going to rescue you in time, Violet said, thinking furiously, then my siblings and I have to climb back up to the penthouse right away. Isadora looked nervously around the tiny dark room.
You're going to leave us alone?
She asked. If I'm going to invent something to get you out of that cage, Violet replied, I need all the help I can get, so Klaus and Sunny have to come with me. Sunny, start climbing. Klaus and I will be right behind you.
Oh, no, Sue,
Sunny said, which meant, yes, ma'am, and Klaus lifted her up to the end of the rope so she could begin the long, dark climb back up to the squalor's apartment. Klaus began climbing right behind her, and Violet clasped hands with her friends.
We'll be back as soon as we can, she promised. Don't worry, Quagmires. You'll be out of danger before you know it.
In case anything goes wrong,
Duncan said, flipping to a page in his notebook,
like it did the last time, let me tell you.
Violet placed her finger on Duncan's mouth.
Shush, she said. Nothing will go wrong this time, I swear it. But if it does, Duncan said, you should know about VFD before the auction begins.
Don't tell me about it now, Violet said. We don't have time. You can tell us when we're all safe and sound.
The eldest Baudelaire grabbed the end of the extension cord and started to follow her siblings.
I'll see you soon,
she called down to the Quagmires, who were already fading into the darkness as she began her climb.
I'll see you soon,
she said again, just as she lost all sight of them. The climb back up the secret passageway was much more tiring, but a lot less terrifying, simply because they knew what they would find at the other end of their ersatz rope. On the way down the elevator shaft, the Baudelaires had no idea what would be waiting for them at the bottom of such a dark and cavernous journey. But Violet, Klaus, and Sunny knew that all 71 bedrooms of the squalor penthouse would be at the top. And it was these bedrooms, along with the living rooms, dining rooms, breakfast rooms, snack rooms, sitting rooms, standing rooms, ballrooms, bathrooms, kitchens, and the assortment of rooms that seemed to have no purpose at all, that would be helpful in rescuing the quagmires. "Listen to me," Violet said to her siblings, after they had been climbing for a few minutes. "When we get up to the top, I want the two of you to search the penthouse." "What?" Klaus said, peering down at his sister. "We already searched it yesterday, remember?" "I don't want you to search it for Gunther," Violet replied. "I want you to search it for long, slender objects made of iron."
"A gula,"
Sunny asked, which meant, "What for?" "I think the easiest way to get the quagmires out of that cage will be by welding," Violet said. "Welding is when you use something very hot to melt metal. If we melt through a few of the bars of the cage, we can make a door and get Duncan and Isadora out of there." "That's a good idea," Klaus agreed, "but I thought that welding required a lot of complicated equipment." "Usually it does," Violet said. "In a normal welding situation, I'd use a welding torch, which is a device that makes a very small flame to melt the metal. But the squalors won't have a welding torch, that's a tool, and tools are out. So I'm going to devise another method. When you two find the long, slender objects made of iron, meet me in the kitchen closest to the front door."
"Cell rep," Sunny said,
which meant something like, "That's the one with the bright blue oven."
"Right," Violet said, "and I'm going to use that bright blue oven to heat those iron objects as hot as they can get. When they are burning, burning hot, we will take them back down to the cage and use their heat to melt the bars."
"Will they stay hot long enough to work after such a long climb down?" Klaus asked.
"They'd better," Violet replied grimly. "It's our only hope."
To hear the phrase, "our only hope," always makes one anxious, because it means that if the only hope doesn't work, there is nothing left, and that is never pleasant to think about, however true it might be. The three Baudelaires felt anxious about the fact that Violet's invention was their only hope of rescuing the quagmires, and they were quiet the rest of the way up the elevator shaft, not wanting to consider what would happen to Duncan and Isadora if this only hope didn't work. Finally, they began to see the dim light from the open sliding doors, and at last they were once again at the front door of the squalor's apartment.
"Remember," Violet whispered, "long, slender objects made of iron. We can't use bronze or silver or even gold, because those metals will melt in the oven. I'll see you in the kitchen."
The younger Baudelaires nodded solemnly and followed two different trails of breadcrumbs in opposite directions, while Violet walked straight into the kitchen with the bright blue oven and looked around uncertainly. Cooking had never been her forte, a phrase which here means something she couldn't do very well, except for making toast, and sometimes she couldn't even do that without burning it to a crisp. And she was a bit nervous about using the oven without any adult supervision. But then she thought about all the things she had done recently without adult supervision, sprinkling crumbs on the floor, eating apple butter, climbing down an empty elevator shaft on an ersatz rope made of extension cords, curtain pulls and neckties tied together with the devil's tongue, and stiffened her resolve. She turned the oven's bright blue temperature dial to the highest temperature, 500 degrees Fahrenheit. And then, as the oven slowly heated up, began quietly opening and closing the kitchen drawers, looking for three sturdy oven mitts. Oven mitts, as you probably know, are kitchen accessories that serve as ersatz hands, by enabling you to pick up objects that would burn your fingers if you touched them directly. The Baudelaires would have to use oven mitts, Violet realized, once the long, slender objects were hot enough to be used as welding torches. Just as her siblings entered the kitchen, Violet found three oven mitts, emblazoned with the fancy curly writing of the Inn Boutique, stuffed into the bottom of the ninth drawer she had opened.
"We hit the jackpot,"
Klaus whispered, and Sunny nodded in agreement. The two younger Baudelaires were using an expression which here means, "Look at these fire tongs, they're perfect," and they were absolutely right.
"Fireplaces must have been in at some point,"
Klaus explained, holding up three long, slender pieces of iron, because Sunny remembered that living room with six fireplaces between the ballroom with the green walls and the bathroom with that funny-looking sink. Next to the fireplaces are fire tongs. You know, those long pieces of iron that people use to move logs around to keep a fire going. I figured that if they can touch burning logs, they'll be able to survive a hot oven.
"You really did hit the jackpot," Violet said. "Fire tongs are perfect. Now, when I open the door of the oven, you put them in, Klaus. Sunny, stand back. Babies shouldn't be near a hot oven."
"Prawattle," Sunny said.
She meant something like, older children aren't supposed to be near a hot oven either, especially without adult supervision. But she understood that it was an emergency and crawled to the opposite end of the kitchen, where she could safely watch her older siblings put the long, slender tongs into the hot oven. Like most ovens, the squalor's bright blue oven was designed for baking cakes and casseroles, not fire tongs, and it was impossible to shut the door of the oven with the long pieces of iron inside. So, as the Baudelaire orphans waited for the pieces of iron to heat up into welding torches, the kitchen heated up as well, as some of the hot air from the oven escaped out of the open door. By the time Klaus asked if the welding torches were ready, the kitchen felt as if it were an oven instead of merely containing one.
"Not yet,"
Violet replied, peering carefully into the open oven door.
"The tips of the tongs are just beginning to get yellow with heat. We need them to get white with heat, so it will still be a few minutes."
"I'm nervous," Klaus said, and then corrected himself.
"I mean, I'm anxious. I don't like leaving the quagmires down there all alone."
"I'm anxious too," Violet said, "but the only thing we can do now is wait. If we take the iron out of the oven now, it won't be of any use to us by the time we get all the way down to the cage." Klaus and Sunny sighed, but they nodded in agreement with their sister and settled down to wait for the welding torches to be ready. And as they waited, they felt as if this particular kitchen in the squalor penthouse was being remodeled before their very eyes. When the Baudelaires had searched the apartment to see if Gunther was hiding in it, they had left crumbs in an assortment of bedrooms, living rooms, dining rooms, breakfast rooms, snack rooms, sitting rooms, standing rooms, bathrooms, ballrooms, and kitchens, as well as those rooms that seemed to have no purpose at all. But the one type of room that the squalor penthouse lacked was a waiting room. Waiting rooms, as I'm sure you know, are small rooms with plenty of chairs for waiting, as well as piles of old, dull magazines to read, and some vapid paintings. The word vapid here means usually containing horses in a field or puppies in a basket, while you endure the boredom that doctors and dentists inflict on their patients before bringing them in to poke them and prod them and do all the miserable things that such people are paid to do. It is very rare to have a waiting room in someone's home, because even a home as enormous as the squalor's does not contain a doctor's or dentist's office, and also because waiting rooms are so uninteresting that you would never want one in the place where you live. The Baudelaires had certainly never wished that the squalors had a waiting room in their penthouse, but as they sat and waited for Violet's invention to be ready to use, they felt as if waiting rooms were suddenly in, and Esme had ordered one constructed right there in the kitchen. The kitchen cabinets were not painted with horses in a field, or puppies in a basket, and there were no old, dull magazine articles printed on the bright blue stove. But as the three children waited for the iron objects to turn yellow, and then orange, and then red, as they grew hotter and hotter and hotter, they felt the same itchy nervousness as they did when waiting for a trained medical professional. But at last the fire tongs were white hot, and were ready for their welding appointment with the thick iron bars of the cage. Violet passed out an oven mitt to each of her siblings, and then put the third one on her own hand to carefully remove each tong from the oven. "Hold them very, very carefully," she said, giving an ersatz welding torch to each of her siblings. "They're hot enough to melt metal, so just imagine what they could do if they touched us. But I'm sure we can manage." "It'll be tougher to go down this time," Klaus said, as he followed his sisters to the front door of the penthouse. He held his fire tong straight up, as if it were a regular torch, instead of a welding one, and he kept his eye on the white-hot part, so that it wouldn't brush up against anything or anybody. "We'll each have to keep one hand free to hold the torch, but I'm sure we can manage."
"Celestine,"
Sunny said, when the children reached the sliding doors of the ersatz elevator. She meant something along the lines of, "It'll be terrifying to climb down that horrible passageway again." But after she said Celestine, she added the word
Inipi,
which meant, "But I'm sure we can manage." And the youngest Baudelaire was as sure as her siblings. The three children stood at the edge of the dark passageway, but they did not pause to gather their courage, as they had done before their first descent into the gaping shaft. Their welding torches were hot, as Violet had said, and going down would be tough, as Klaus had said, and the climb would be terrifying, as Sunny had said. But the siblings looked at one another and knew they could manage. The Quagmire triplets were counting on them, and the Baudelaire orphans were sure that this only hope would work after all.